Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, a slight change from the usual schedule this morning. We're having a Bhagavatam class, but not from the book Bhagavat, but from the person Bhagavat. I'll explain that. I've been for the last few years presenting a seminar called Srila Prabhupada, The Living Bhagavatam. So what it is a compilation of Srila Prabhupada's activities, pastimes, his interactions with his disciples, and the practical example that he showed in how to live Krishna consciousness philosophy. So I called it Prabhupada, The Living Bhagavatam, because there are two kinds of Bhagavatams. There's the book. But unless we have the person, then it's very difficult to understand everything that's in the book. Yeah. Of course, the person gets his validity from the book, but he reinforces what's in the book and demonstrates it so that we don't make any mistakes in how we understand the book. Yeah. Otherwise, reading a book, any book, can be a little bit one way, in that we have our own conditioning, we have our own ideas, our own level of intellect, and how we understand something that's being told to us can be a little limited by our own perception. But if we have a living example before us, then we can see very clearly how that philosophy may be applied. And not just in one circumstance, but there may be myriad circumstances. And the same instruction may be applied in different ways according to the individuals that are involved in the time, place, and circumstance. So in that way, then, it becomes multidimensional. And, of course, we know that if it were not for the fact that Srila Prabhupada was demonstrating how to be a Krishna conscious devotee, there may have been some effect from his books, no doubt, but it would not have had the same effect that it had with him personally present, traveling, going here to there, meeting with so many individuals, corresponding with them, and by his own interaction and experience in spreading Krishna consciousness, that realization that he was getting was being poured into his purports as he was writing his Bhagavatam. So that was enriching. His own experience was enriching his ability to write his transcendental literature. So in that way then, it became very, very powerful in all respects. So what I did was, of course, what I'm going to present is not everything that Prabhupada ever said on a particular topic. That wouldn't be possible. What I've done is taken different topics or different aspects of devotional life, such as chanting or books or prasadam or cleanliness, health, like that, different aspects of our devotional lives. And whatever Prabhupada said or did in relation to that, a particular topic, that theme, then I've tried to compile that into some kind of order. But it's not a presentation of everything Prabhupada ever said or did on that topic. It's mainly drawn from my own experience when I was traveling with Srila Prabhupada from late 1975 up until March of 1977. So most of the material is garnered from about a year and a half. Where appropriate, I put a few extra things in, letters or anecdotes, etc., just to clarify something. But that's mainly it. So it's meant to be a synopsis rather than, you know, the entire thing. If you want to read about all of it, then you'll have to read all the books, all the biographies of Srila Prabhupada, the Lilamrita and everything else that's been written, and then you'll get a more complete, rounded. But at least from this, I hope that you'll get some nice insights, which will enhance your understanding of how to live what the messages are in Srila Prabhupada's books. So I joined Prabhupada's party on November the 27th, 1975. At that time he was visiting New Delhi. In those days we had a vastly different setup from what you see nowadays. Now we have that huge building in east of Kailash and thousands of people coming. In 75 we had a very tiny little house, one story house on Totemo Lane in Bengali markets. It's not very far actually, walking distance, you know, from the main central areas of Delhi, India Gate and all those places. But although the area is quite prestigious, the building that we had was not. It had been used as a go-down, and then we had rented it and cleaned it up a little bit, and Radha Paratasarathy were residing there. So in that respect, it was a nice ISKCON temple, but nothing else much was going on. There were only about six or seven devotees in the holy yatra there at that time. Tejas Prabhu, he was there with his wife, Madeira. And then there was Omkar and his wife, Nirmala. Tribhuvanath Prabhu from England. He was, I think, one of the lone brahmacharis that was there. And there were a couple of others. Prabhupada came there on the 25th. He was in an unusual situation because generally by that time he had a well-established party that he traveled with, at least a secretary and a servant, and often a Sanskrit editor. So like that, two, three, four men would travel with him. And during Janmashtami, which is a couple of months before I joined the party, he had arrived in Vrindavan for 3 weeks. He had Brahmananda Swami as his secretary. Upendra Prabhu was one of his servants. Harikesh Das Brahmachari at that time. He was transcribing Prabhupada's nightly dictations. And Nitai Das was also on the party as the Sanskrit editor and doubling up as a servant also. When Prabhupada left Vrindavan, he went down to Bombay. Then he went on his one and only visit to South Africa. He also went to Mauritius, and they dropped off in Nairobi. So in Nairobi, another devotee joined the party temporarily. That was Ambarish Prabhu, who was just here. He'll be back again in a couple of days. He had flown in because Prabhupada had in mind a scheme in Kurukshetra. He visited there earlier in the year. There was a lot of development going on under the auspices of Gulzarilal Nanda, who I think had been a stand-in prime minister at one point when Shastri died. He was the acting prime minister for a few days till they picked somebody new. So he was a big man. He had retired from politics and he had gotten the government to give him at that time, which was a lot of money, about 1.5 crores of rupees to develop the Kurukshetra area. So Prabhupada was interested in building a Varnashram college there. That was his idea. So he'd gone there, and then late in the year he said, I'll be back, I'd like to come again, I'd like to see the land that's available, and then we'll discuss. So Prabhupada had come up to New Delhi then in late November with the intention of meeting with Gulzarilal Nanda and then going to Kurukshetra. And Ambarish Prabhu then flew into Nairobi and then to India, here to Bombay, with Srila Prabhupada at the beginning of November, and then up to Delhi with the intention of providing some funds for that Varnashram college. So he gave Prabhupada $150,000 to get that project started, and Prabhupada invited him, come with me, let's go and we'll see the land. Like that. So Ambarish made one of his, it might have been his first trip actually, to India. He spent some time here in Bombay. He was going out on life membership making with Giriraj Maharaj. Then they came up to New Delhi. So when Prabhupada went to Africa, he saw there were some problems there in the yatra. There were some disturbances. Some of the devotees did not behave very well. Some of the life members were a bit put out. Brahmananda Maharaj was the GBC at that time, as well as Prabhupada's traveling secretary. He was the GBC for Africa. So when they returned back to Bombay in early November, then Prabhupada told him, now it's your zone. You have to go back there and fix all the problems. So he was, you know, booted off the party, basically. And so they had to get a new secretary. Hansa Dutta, he was in Germany at that time. They'd had problems in Germany. The government had attempted to shut us down in late 1974. So Hansa Dutta was feeling a little disconsolate. So Prabhupada invited him to come in and be his new secretary for 1 month, or one and a half months, to take over from Brahmananda Swami. And another devotee that had come on to Prabhupada's party briefly when we were in Vrindavan was Navayogendra Das Brahmachari. He had been in Africa. He was disturbed by what was going on there. He'd flown into Vrindavan at Janmashtami time. So Prabhupada said, all right, you stay with me. That was sometimes Prabhupada's solution. If an individual devotee was, especially a leader, was having, you know, some disturbance, then Prabhupada would invite them, come and live with me. You just stay with me, everything will be all right. So he did that with Navayogendra. And then from Vrindavan, they'd gone down to Bombay and then to Africa. Now, when they went down to Bombay, Upendra, who was Prabhupada's servant, decided that he would remain behind in Vrindavan. He was supposed to go and preach in Fiji. So they were supposed to send him a ticket. It hadn't arrived. So he was going to wait there in Vrindavan. And when he got his ticket, then he would go to Fiji. Nittai Das, who was the other servant and the Sanskrit editor, also decided he was going to remain behind in Vrindavan because they were just starting the Gurukul there. And also, of course, the temple had just been opened about 6 months before, or not even 6 months, Ram Nami up to Janmashtami. And, you know, there was a big deity program, the biggest in ISKCON at that time. And so he had an interest in deity worship. He was a bit of a pundit, Sanskrit man. So he was reading Hari Bhakti Vilas, and he had undertaken this project to put out this book on deity worship that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had published. Archana Padati? Yes, Archana Padati. So he was translating that. So he wanted to stay in Vrindavan. So when Prabhupada went down to Bombay, he took Navayogendra, he took Brahmananda, and he took Harikesh. He went to Africa, but the African Yatra was poor. So they pleaded that we can't afford all the tickets. Please just come with the servant and secretary bus. So Navayogendra was left behind in Bombay. Prabhupada went to South Africa with Brahmananda. Pushtakrishna Swami was there at that time doing some preaching. So he took over the servant's duties. And Harikesh was there as the cook and to continue with the transcribing. So then when they returned from Africa because of this disturbance, then Brahmananda was told, now you have to go back. So then he said, well, I'll need some assistance. It's difficult there. Africa's not an easy place to preach. So then Prabhupada told Navayogendra, you were there preaching before, so now you go back with Brahmananda. I'll give you sannyas. Now you will have some authority to act. So then at that time, another devotee who had previously been on Prabhupada's personal party in 1972 was Nanda Kumar. Actually, the first time I saw Prabhupada was on April the 1st in 1972 when he came to Sydney for his second visit to Australia. I was a new Bhakta at that time. I'd only joined 6 weeks before. And Prabhupada's party at that time was Shyama Sundar Prabhu from San Francisco. He likes to come here. He was the secretary. And Pradyumna Prabhu, he was the Sanskrit editor. And Nanda Kumar Prabhu was Prabhupada's personal servant. So Nanda Kumar was there most of 72 with Srila Prabhupada. And then he had some disturbance. He got a bit distracted. He left his service. Shrutakirti Prabhu took over after he left. And he was kind of, he got married, or he was already married, but anyway, he got into some business. So then in 75, he was here in India when Prabhupada returned from Africa in early November, and he turned up here in Bombay. And he came to see Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada asked him, "So what are you doing?" So he said, "I'm doing business, Srila Prabhupada." Now, Prabhupada had already had a little bit of information about Nanda Kumar's activities. He had a certain weakness for a certain kind of herb. So he was, his business was that he was buying Ayurvedic medicines and exporting them and selling them in America. But the rumor was, and I'm not saying this is true, there was another kind of herb that people like for recreational purposes. And he was also buying and selling that. So when he told Prabhupada that, you know, "I'm doing this business," Prabhupada said, "If you do that business, you will go to hell." So Nanda Kumar was shocked. This is how I heard it. It might be a little different, but this is what I heard. So Nanda Kumar was quite, he was shocked. So he said, "But, well, Prabhupada, what shall I do?" And Prabhupada said, "Take sannyas." So he immediately gave him sannyas along with Navi Yogendra. And the two of them were sent with Brahmananda to Africa. So when Prabhupada came up on the 25th of November to New Delhi, he only had Harikesh with him. And Ambarish, of course, was tagging along there for that Kurukshetra business. So Hansadutta flew in and he met them in New Delhi on the same day. He came from Germany. But there was a problem because there was nobody there to do the servants' duties. And the other two servants that had been left behind in Vrindavan at Janmashtami, they were still there. Nitai was there. Upendra was there. But Upendra had just received his ticket to go to Fiji. So he was on his way out. So he came from Vrindavan into Delhi to see Prabhupada. He filled in for 2 days doing the massage, but on the 27th, he was flying to Fiji. That left Nitai. But Nitai had a problem with his visa. I think he had to extend it or something. He was registered in Bombay and not in Mathura. So he had the same day, the 25th, he came to see Prabhupada in Delhi, but he had to shoot through the same evening to Bombay to get his visa business done. And that was going to take a few weeks. So there was a dilemma. There was nobody there to do Prabhupada's personal service during the period that he was going to go. He would be in Delhi for a few days until he could meet with Nandaji. Then they were going to go to Kurukshetra for a day. And then he was due to come back to Vrindavan for at least 10 or 12 days. So they needed somebody to do Prabhupada's personal service, mainly his massages, during that period. So I just happened to be there in Delhi on some private business just for the day, and it happened to be the same day that Prabhupada arrived. So I was very happy about that, that I would get to see Srila Prabhupada, at least for the afternoon darshan, before I returned to Vrindavan. And at that time I'd been the temple commander in Vrindavan. And when Prabhupada had come during the Janmashtami period from Janmashtami to Radhashtami, then they, Brahmananda, brought with him some of the new editions of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So of course 75, I think about 14 new volumes of the Chaitanya Charitamrita were published. So the whole society was absorbed in reading, you know, the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. And it was so wonderful. We'd never seen it before. We'd read teachings of Lord Chaitanya and we'd read, you know, the first couple of volumes of the Adi Leela. But then when we got the Madhya Leela and the Antya Leela, you know, we were very excited. So they had brought a couple of volumes with them. That was the system, was that when the BBT published a new book, Prabhupada would get the first two copies off the press. So he would have his secretary carry them with him. So Brahmananda came as the secretary there in Vrindavan. I was the temple commander, so I had a little bit of access, at least to the secretaries. I saw there was the volume about the Rath Yatra and the cleansing of the Gundicha temple. So I got very excited about that because I was the temple commander. And that was one of my main duties, was cleaning. Yeah. Prabhupada, when he had come, he had strictly regulated all our activities. This was a big new temple and he wanted to make sure that it was being run properly. And one of the main things that he was concerned about was the cleanliness. So he made a schedule for us that we would have to clean the whole temple immediately after Mangal Arati. So everybody had to go out. And then we ran up and down with the buckets of water and the squeegees. And we cleaned up the temple and then let everybody back in. We had to clean it again at 1:30 when the temple closed for the afternoon. And then we had to clean it again at 9:30 when the temple closed for the night. So three times a day we were, you know, washing with water and the squeegees. And the other thing was that when Prabhupada came out of the temple for his morning walk, that would be, of course, just on dawn. And it was just immediately after Mangal Arati, really, then it would begin getting light. So we had to run around like madmen, because when Prabhupada walked out down the side of the temple to the front gate, he would see every single speck of dirt and dust. And he would want to know, why is this not cleansed? It's already light and still the pavement is dirty. So we had to, the first thing that we did, we learnt that if we ran out immediately after Mangal Arati, we'd throw water all over the pathway going up to the front, run up and down with the squeegees. And then just as we finished, Prabhupada would come out from his quarters and he would walk up and he would see, oh yes, it's clean. There was a funny incident, actually. There was this devotee, Vishal. He's quite an eccentric character, if any of you have ever met him. Very lovable kind of person, but very, very eccentric. And he has this kind of mannerism where he'd be, you know, almost overly humble. Oh, Prabhu, please accept my humble obeisance thousands and thousands of times. like this. And so he thought it would be nice when Prabhupada came out for his morning walk that he would greet him, you know, by reading some verses, you know, like the pandits do when a great personality walks past. Then they chant Sanskrit mantras as, you know, to receive the person. So he was stood at the gateway one morning and he was chanting these verses, reading them out from the Bhagavatam. And the verse that he was reading out as Prabhupada came up and walked past him was, you know, that famous verse that we think we've met your holiness by the will of providence, like that. So as he read that out, just when he said by the will of providence, Prabhupada stopped and he said, it is by the will of providence that it is dirty. And he pointed down and Vishal was stood in a big pool of water at the entrance. And then Vishal was kind of bewildered and he looked down and he said, oh, I'm sorry, Srila Prabhupada, I should do something about that. And Prabhupada said, it is dirty. He said, where there is water, then the dirt will come and then you will paddle it in. He said, clean it. Do something practical. Said, simply chanting. He said, do something practical. And off he went. Down on his morning walk, he left Vishal there, you know, standing completely bewildered, you know. Anyway, so Prabhupada, you know, he saw everything. And any little, you know, dirt or even the potential for something becoming dirty, he immediately pointed it out. So as the temple commander, you know, that was my business, to make sure that everything was clean. So we got into it, you know, it was nice. I liked that part of my service, actually. I loved to clean things. So they arrived and they had this volume of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which explained about the cleaning of the Gundicha temple. So I got that. I borrowed it from Brahmananda. And I read through the whole thing several times. And I got, you know, we were really excited about it. Just the description of how they cleansed everything so thoroughly. And they were chanting as they did that. Then after they cleaned it one time, again they came and they cleaned it another time. And they cleaned the ceiling, then down the walls, then out the door, and way away from the door so nothing would be paddled back in. So we got right into that description. And then when Prabhupada left, then after a couple of months in October, because we heard that Prabhupada will be coming back in early December, so I got this idea that the temple, you know, was opened in April, and it's never really had a good scrub down since Srila Prabhupada's visit. So we should not just clean the floors, let's do the whole Gaudiya temple thing and clean everything from top to bottom, yeah. The ceilings, the floor, you know, the walls, and of course, Vrindavan temple's quite high. So they had these wooden towers. I think they've still got one there. They had these wooden towers that you could climb up on the top and change the light bulbs and things with. So we got one of those. I went out, I bought a big hose pipe, and one devotee that had just joined at that time was Daddy Baksha. Some of you know Daddy Baksha. He's there in the Juhu temple since many years. So he was a new Bhakta at that time. And there was another devotee that had joined. His name, he was an older Bengali man. His name was Vibhu Chaitanya. So they were my recruits. So we spent the whole month of October, you know, and early November cleaning the whole temple from top to bottom, you know, the ceilings and walls and everything. And we did everything. And then just when Prabhupada came on the 25th of November, I still had just the deity wall, the front wall. That was the last thing to be cleansed, and then it would be done. So I was figuring, now it'll take a couple of days, a few days to do that. We'll get that done just before Prabhupada comes to Vrindavan in early December. But then when I arrived in Delhi, then there was this situation. Prabhupada didn't have a fixed-up servant to do his massage. I didn't know that, of course. I was only there for the day. But before I could return to Vrindavan, Gopal Krishna Maharaj did the best service that he ever did, for me at least. He caught hold of me. He was my GBC. And he said, "Harry, sorry, you have to stay in Delhi as long as Prabhupada is here because we need somebody to guard his door." Now, Prabhupada wasn't staying at the temple because there was no room there. Tejas had a small apartment a few doors down on the same road. So Prabhupada was staying there. And Gopal Krishna got the idea that somebody should sit at the door as a door guard. I thought, you know, what does Prabhupada need a door guard for in Delhi of all places? But at the same time, I was thinking, now if I sit at the door, I'll get to see Prabhupada coming in and out. Yeah, so that would be great. So I was very happy to accept that. He said, "Don't worry about finishing the cleaning. I'll get somebody else in Vrindavan to do that. But now you're here, you just stay here and guard the door." So I did. So then the next day, I was sitting mid-morning in the temple. I had gone into Prabhupada's apartment during his morning walk and cleaned it up. And then maybe around about 11:30, 12 o'clock, I was sitting in front of Radha Paratasarati chanting my rounds. And Hari Kesh came in. He opened the door and he used to wear these really thick glasses. And he's quite an intense person, you know, anyway. So it's kind of magnified by his glasses, the big eyes. And he stopped and he looked at me like this and he said, "Do you know how to do massage?" So I said, "No, never done it in my life." So then he said, "Well," he said, "Upendra is leaving tomorrow and there's nobody to massage Srila Prabhupada. You're going to do it." So he said, "Upendra's up on the roof right now doing Prabhupada's massage. Go up there and see how he does it." So naturally I was flabbergasted. I couldn't believe it. It was like, you know, one of those surreal dreamscapes or something. But I wasn't going to argue with that either and say, well, no, I can't do it because I don't know how. I wasn't that big of a fool. So, you know, I ran down the road as fast as I could, three flights of stairs. I came out onto the roof. I couldn't believe that that it was actually happening. But when I came on the roof, sure enough, there was Srila Prabhupada sitting on a mat, and Upendra was massaging him. So I thought, wow, this is really happening. This is true. So I offered my obeisances, and then I sat down. Prabhupada had his eyes closed, and Upendra saw me, and he was just massaging away. Then after about a minute, Prabhupada opened his eyes. He saw me sitting there, so he said, so? And the way that he said it, it made me think that maybe I'd made a mistake and that, you know, I'd misheard what Harikesh was actually saying and that I wasn't supposed to be there. So I said, well, Harikesh said, Pendra's leaving tomorrow and you need somebody to do the massage. So he said that I should come up and, you know, see how Upendra's doing it and learn from him. And then Prabhupada said, all right. And then he closed his eyes again, and that was it. He didn't even look at me for the next hour. So just, you know, watching Upendra. And then at the end, Prabhupada got up. He went downstairs to take his bath. And then Upendra took literally just 2 minutes, because he had to run down after Prabhupada. So he took 2 minutes to tell me how to do the whole massage. And I'd never massaged anybody before, what to speak about Srila Prabhupada, and I'd never touched Srila Prabhupada except one time when I actually touched his feet when he arrived in Melbourne in 1975 at the airport, and I'd been given a garland, you know, to put round Prabhupada's neck, and I saw Madhavisa Swami, he was the GBC at that time, he'd gone forward and he had put his garland on Prabhupada's neck, and then he got down and he bowed down and he put his head on Prabhupada's feet. And Prabhupada was very happy just to stand there. It was right at the doorway of the aeroplane. He was happy just to stand there and let Madhavisa, you know, bow down, put his head on his feet. So I thought, I'm going to do that. If Madhavisa can do it, I'm going to do it. So I put my garland on and I did the same thing. I think Prabhupada was a little, he wanted to move forward, but anyway, I got my little touch. I touched Prabhupada's feet, so I was in ecstasy. But that was the only time I'd ever touched him. And in Vrindavan, after Prabhupada had left to go to South Africa, Nittai was there in Vrindavan. He, you know, dropped off the party. So we used to talk sometimes in the morning at breakfast. And one morning I was just thinking, this man is so fortunate that he was massaging Prabhupada every day. So I told him one morning, I said, you know, I can't even conceive of it. I said, you were actually massaging Prabhupada every day. I said, I could never do that. You know, I said, I'm so gross. You know, I probably, you know, hurt him or something. So I said, I could never do that. And he just laughed. He said, you would if you got the chance. So I said, well, I'm never going to get the chance, am I? So that was probably around September, October time. And then there we are now in November. And then suddenly, you know, I'm told, now you have to massage Prabhupada. So you can imagine, you know, what I was thinking. I was very, very nervous. And anyway, the next day then, I was told to report to Srila Prabhupada's room at 11 o'clock. Of course, in the evening also, I found out that there was an evening massage that I didn't even know about. And Upendra had told me in the afternoon, he said, now come back this evening at 9 o'clock, and Prabhupada has his evening massage. I'll show you how to do that as well. So I did that. So then the next day, anyway, 11 o'clock, I reported in the morning to Prabhupada's quarters. And sure enough, there was Upendra. His suitcase was packed up. Prabhupada was just giving him a few words of encouragement for his preaching in Fiji. He gave him one of his garlands. And that was it. Off he went. He got the taxi off to the airport. So as he left, then Prabhupada turned around. He looked at me and said, "So? Let's go." So off we went. He went off upstairs for his massage, and you know, I trotted after him. And then I was on, so I had to give him my first massage. So I won't give all the details about that, otherwise we'll never get to this morning's class, actually. But it was a wonderful experience, to say the least. And the real trick was that, as nervous as I was, Prabhupada needed the service. So it was a question of, you know, putting the service before your own personal feelings and apprehensions or whatever. You know, when you're requested by the guru, then you have to do it. That's all there is to it. So I did my best. I tried to imagine what it would be like to receive the massage and then acted accordingly. And apparently afterwards, Prabhupada told Harikesh, who had had quite severe reservations about me coming on to be the Masur. he'd seen me in action as the temple commander in Vrindavan, so he knew how passionate I was. They used to call me Heavy Harry. So he knew what he was going to have to deal with if I came on the party. So he was a little apprehensive. But Prabhupada told him, no, he said he gave me a good massage. So I was really happy about that. Anyway, to cut a long story short, I was supposed to massage Prabhupada just for 2 or 3 days up until Gulzarilal Nanda came. And then they were going to go to Kurukshetra for the day. And then Harikesh informed me that when we get to Vrindavan, then somebody else is going to do the massage. So don't get attached. Don't think that you're Prabhupada's servant. You know, you're not. And just to make sure that I understood that, the first day that I did the massage, on the 27th, immediately after Prabhupada went into the bathroom, Harikesh said, "Out." He kicked me out the house, just, you know, to drive home the point. I'm the servant, you're just filling in. Anyway, things worked out a little differently, fortunately. We did go to Kurukshetra for one day, and I was, you know, told by Srila Prabhupada to continue with my service for that little trip. So I got my chance to travel with Prabhupada for the very first time. And then on the 2nd of December, we went to Vrindavan, and Prabhupada was going to be there about 12 days or so. And that was the intention, that there was this devotee, Prituputra. He was a French brahmachari. Not brahmachari, actually. But anyway, he was a French devotee. He was there in Vrindavan. He'd already been told by Harikesh that when we come, you'll be doing the massage. So when we arrived there in Vrindavan, I was allowed to travel back to Vrindavan with the party. But then I had this other pressure on me from Gopal Krishna. He was my GBC. So, you know, Harikesh was telling me, don't think you're on Prabhupada's party, you're not. And Gopal Krishna was telling me the same thing. Don't think that you're going to join Prabhupada's party, you're not. I need a new temple president in Calcutta, and you're it. So as soon as Prabhupada goes to Vrindavan, you're going to get your bags, and you're going to get on the next train out to Calcutta. So, you know, I thought that was ridiculous. I'd only been in India 3 months, and he wanted me to be the temple president in Calcutta. I was thinking it was just balmy. But that was the situation in those days in India. We didn't have so many devotees, and anybody that walked in the door, practically, you were immediately became the head pujari, the temple commander, the temple president of this, or, you know, whatever it was. That literally happened to me when I arrived in Vrindavan at the end of July or early August in 75. I'd been there for the temple opening. It was my first trip to India. Then we'd gone back to Australia. Then I decided I'd like to come and serve in the new Vrindavan temple. And when I arrived, as I was walking through the front gate with my bags, there was this other devotee. He was back to Richard at that time. He became initiated as Bhagavata Shraya afterwards. He saw me. He was a friend that had joined in Australia. So as soon as he saw me walking through the gate, he grabbed hold of me. He dragged me into Akayananda Swami's room. He was the temple president. He said, "I found a new temple commander." And that was it. I was the temple commander. 2 minutes. Anyway, India was a bit like that. You know, it was very eclectic. So, anyway, we went back to Vrindavan on the 2nd of December. I was told, now here's Prituputra. You tell him how to do the massage. He's going to take over. So I was happy. I mean, there was nothing to complain about. I had no ambitions. I had no rights. I was just very, very happy that I'd had these 3 or 4 days massaging Srila Prabhupada. And I remember when we arrived in Vrindavan and the devotees were all there chanting to greet Prabhupada out the car, I had a few friends, close friends, like Bhagavata Shraya, Gunanava Prabhu, and a few others, Prituputra. So when I stepped out the car with Srila Prabhupada, they knew I'd gone to Delhi for some private business. And then the next thing they hear is Hari Sauri's, you know, massaging Prabhupada. So when I came back to Vrindavan, they're all looking at me like this. You know, they couldn't believe it. But anyway, I was supposed to tell Prituputra how to do Prabhupada's massage. The day before, when we got to Kurukshetra, I had made a mistake. Prabhupada, when he bathed, he would always bathe in his gamsha. And then when he dried himself, he would wrap his towel around himself and then drop his gamsha off into the bucket, because Prabhupada liked to bathe out of a bucket. So when I cleaned up afterwards, I didn't think to look inside the bucket. That was where his gamsha was. So I left it there. So then Hari Kesh told me, now you have to go and buy a new one. So that first morning then, back in Vrindavan, I took Prituputra with me on the rickshaw. We went down to Loy Bazaar. I told him everything that had happened in the last few days. I explained all about the massages. And we bought the gamsha and then came back. But when we came back, then Hari Kesh was there at Prabhupada's doorway, waiting for us and looking very glum, yeah, not looking happy. Then he told us, he said, "I told Srila Prabhupada, Prituputra is going to do the massage now." And he became angry. He said, "No, why are you changing?" He said, "Whenever you change, then that means I'm inconvenienced." So he said, he was doing all right. Why are you changing him? So Hari Kesh told Prituputra, he said, "I'm sorry, Pritu, you're out." He was immediately miserable. And I was... I was ecstatic. And then Hari Kesh told me, he said, "Now get your bags and move in." So that was it. I would move right into Prabhupada's quarters. So anyway. So then that was my first day. And Hari Kesh told me, and Prabhupada said that now you're not just to do the massage, but you have to take over all the servants' duties, the full servants' duties. And then he was kind of lamenting. He was saying, "I don't know what I'm going to be doing now. You know, that's half my service gone." He was afraid that, you know, Prabhupada would kick him off the party and send him out preaching. So that was another reason why he didn't want me coming on. Anyway, things worked out a little differently. So I moved right in there. So I had my first day, full day, with Srila Prabhupada on December the 2nd. You know, doing the full-time duties. So in the afternoons, Prabhupada would have his lunch and then he would go up the back staircase onto the roof. And there's a room there. So there was a little veranda on the front, the room, and then another veranda on the back. And you got through to the back veranda by going through the room. So Prabhupada liked to go up there in the afternoons and he would rest inside the room. So we went up, he walked in. Then he turned to me, and there was a small mat that was just outside the door on the front veranda. So he said, "You stay here." He said, "I'm going to take rest for about an hour. So you remain here. And then he looked at me, he said, now, he said, your only business is to be with me 24 hours. That was it. So that was my first direct instruction from Srila Prabhupada. Just be there 24 hours. And then he went in and closed the door and took rest. So I sat there on the mat and waited. So afterwards, Prabhupada was sitting in his room. It was quiet. There were not that many visitors in those days. Krishna Balaram Mandir had not been open very long. It was, you know, also still rainy season, so not a lot of people were coming. So Prabhupada had a bit of time in his room to just sit quietly. So I remember sitting there in the afternoon. He'd come down for his darshan. A few people had come. But Prabhupada was sitting there and he was just chanting very quietly. And I was watching him. And I just suddenly had this realization. I mean, a big realization about, you know, the value of being there with Srila Prabhupada and being able to just sit there and look at him, observe him. So I had, in Delhi, the first night, actually, I'd come out after Upendra had shown me how to do the evening massage. And it suddenly struck me that, you know, this is a kind of an opportunity that you wouldn't get in lifetimes, many lifetimes. You know, who could imagine getting that opportunity to be with somebody like Srila Prabhupada, to massage him and personally serve him. So I thought, I'm going to write this down. I should keep some notes. And then, you know, years to come, 10, 20 years' time, I'll be able to read those notes and read about and remember all the things that happened. So on the corner of the street there, there was the new janitor bookstore. And it was still open even at 10 o'clock at night. It was one of those little hole-in-the-wall things. And so I ran down there and I bought a blank notebook. So I started writing a few notes. I thought 3 or 4 days, you know, I'll make some notes. Then when I got more permanently fixed on the party, then I thought I'll just keep this up. So I did. I kept up writing that diary for the whole time I was with Prabhupada. So that first day anyway, in the afternoon, I was sitting there and I was just looking at Prabhupada and I got this really powerful realization about the value of just being there in the presence, you know, of a pure devotee. Not a pure devotee, the pure devotee. There was no other pure devotees in those days. There was only Prabhupada. That was it. So I was just looking and then, you know, I wrote that down, that realization that I had. So I've got that. Of course, later on I published that diary in some volumes, 5 volumes so far. And so that realization, then I wrote that down. This was on December the 2nd then in 75 in Vrindavan. It is extremely pleasurable to be with Prabhupada during these quiet moments. He is gentle and mild in his manner and completely fixed and steady in his devotion to Krishna. He has tremendous strength and force, but he is devoid of passion. His presence is totally dominating without being at all domineering. His mind and senses are controlled effortlessly. His intelligence is perfectly clear, and he knows how to act and how others should act in every situation. His presence thus makes spiritual life a reality. Watching him today, it struck me that he is a living, breathing Bhagavatam. Whatever description of Krishna consciousness is in his books, he himself is that. Reading his books brings gradual realization. But what is understood in perhaps several lifetimes of study is revealed on a second-to-second, minute-to-minute, and day-to-day basis in Prabhupada's personal association. I've therefore resolved within myself to learn as much as I can while I have this matchless opportunity to observe him closely. Simply watching Srila Prabhupada in his daily activities, how he deals with devotees, how he responds to different situations, how he preaches, how he manages the worldwide affairs of his ever-expanding society, how he relaxes, how he continually pushes forward the movement of Lord Chaitanya, and how absolutely every facet of his being is fully Krishna conscious. It is quite feasible then to understand the full import of the sacred scriptures. By studying and preaching, one may make steady advancement. But at least for me, although I have full faith in Krishna consciousness, many ideas and principles are still only intellectually perceived, but not yet fully realized. But by observing Srila Prabhupada, I can see that they're a natural, integral part of his very being. So that was it. I just had this realization. This is the whole Bhagavatam. Everything there, right there, personified in Srila Prabhupada. All I have to do is just observe and hear. And I'll understand everything about, well, as much as I can, about what Krishna consciousness actually is. So that principle then of the living Bhagavatam. Then later on, Prabhupada himself, when we were on tour, because I ended up being with Prabhupada for nearly a year and a half. We were on he did his last world tour in 1976. And part of that tour, we went to New Mayapur in France. So when Prabhupada was there, he met with this Professor Francois Chanique. He was a very nice gentleman. He was a professor at some big university in Paris. He had written a very favorable review of Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita Tel Quelle, yeah, Bhagavad Gita as it is in the French language. So just before Prabhupada arrived in France in late July, he had been presented with the first volume of the French Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Part 1. It was the very first publication of the French edition of the Bhagavatam. Bhagavan Prabhu and Prituputra, they gave it to him. Prabhupada was tremendously happy with that. Then when we came to France then, this Professor Chanique, he was invited, why don't you come and meet Srila Prabhupada personally? So he was very happy to do that. He came, I think it was a weekend when he came. It was August the 5th, 1976. And when he came, he walked in Prabhupada's room. He had japa beads around his neck. He had tilak. And he had a dhoti on. So just for the occasion, he dressed like a devotee. Although when Prabhupada complimented him, and he was very humble actually. He wasn't like, you know, the typical image that we have of the all-knowing professor. He was a very humble man actually. And Prabhupada, he was saying, I'm not really a devotee. He said, I'm more inclined to Buddhism. But the Prabhupada said, no. He said, that means you are a devotee, that you were so humble. He said, that is a devotee. So there was a nice opening exchange. He had his daughter with him also. She was, I think, dressed in a sari. So they had a nice darshan and conversation with Srila Prabhupada. So with the preliminary introductions done, Professor Chanique said that he was keen to see that Prabhupada's Bhagavatam come into use in the universities. He said that there was only one other French edition of it, and that had been done in the 1800s, and it had no commentary. But at the university level, he said that the French were meticulous about maintaining the grammatical standards of their language. He was politely concerned that our translations should not smell of English, as he put it. If you're from that part of the world, that you'll know that the French are completely paranoid about the English language invading their language and defiling it. They even pass laws forbidding people to use English words in their ordinary talk. Yeah, so you can't say TV, television, you have to say the French word for that. And same with everything else. So that they have this thing, you know, the English language is going to invade us. Because they have a long history of the English and the French, the English invading parts of France and conquering them. And then they do the same thing back to the English. So it's been going on for a long time. So this professor, he said that, you know, our books should not smell of English. So he described French as a more compact language than English, and he wondered whether it might not be better to translate directly from the Sanskrit into French. Prabhupada was not very concerned. While acknowledging that if possible improvements could be made to future editions, he explained that as yet, no French devotee had become a Sanskritist. But besides that, he said it's not a question of scholarship. The translator must be a self-realized soul. He said that although there are many Sanskrit scholars in India, they cannot understand the Srimad Bhagavatam. He must be French, expert in language, at the same time a devotee, Prabhupada said. Then he can explain, otherwise no. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's secretary, Swarup Damodar, he asked, Bhagavat Padagiya Bhagavat Stane, you go and study the Bhagavat from the Bhagavat. So, I've discussed this in the beginning of my translation of the Bhagavat. So the Bhagavat, that is the limit of education. Vidya Bhagavata Vidhi. One has to study and take his education up to the Bhagavatam. That means if one understands the Bhagavatam, then he has finished his education. Prabhupada was always very direct and bold. He was a big professor from the university, and he's telling him, you just read the Bhagavatam, then you're educated. Yeah. The professor assured Prabhupada that he wasn't in any way criticizing, but he was concerned that Prabhupada should get the widest possible audience. He felt that an improvement in the way that the French editions were written would ensure that. So the idea was that the French editions were being translated from English into French. So sometimes, you know, the translators, in order to preserve the real meaning of what Prabhupada was saying, the phraseology, French phrases that they used were a little clumsy. So Prabhupada appreciated his concern, but he continued to stress his point. That is from the scholarship point of view, he said. But our point is that this Bhagavat must be presented by the Bhagavat. And there is not so much scholarship required. Just like the Bhagavat begins with the word Jammadjasya Jata. So this Sanskrit word means the absolute truth is that from where everything emanates. Now, the absolute truth, further explained, Anvayaditaratas cha abhigyaswarat. That absolute truth is aware of everything, directly and indirectly, of all of this creation. So in this way, if you step-by-step study, it is not very difficult, so far the word meanings are concerned. But it is a question of realization. Unless one is realized, he cannot explain properly. That is the secret. Therefore, we have given the life of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in our Bhagavatam, because he is the living Bhagavatam. Same thing there. So the living Bhagavatam. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that was what he did. He lived the Bhagavatam. He demonstrated it. Before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who knew what the real import of the Bhagavatam was? But when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates appeared, they demonstrated the real meaning of the Bhagavatam, what it means to be a pure devotee of Krishna and fully engage in transcendental leelas and activities with the Lord. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the living Bhagavatam, and Srila Prabhupada, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's representative, was also the living Bhagavatam. Yeah? And without that living Bhagavatam, that book Bhagavat becomes a mystery. That's all. Yeah. So one last thing, just on the principle of Bhagavat. There was a very nice description or explanation of Bhagavat that Prabhupada gave in Honolulu on May the 7th in 1976. So he was speaking from Canto 6, Chapter 1, Verse 6, which describes Shukadeva Goswami as being Mahabhaga. So Prabhupada told us, he says, so here Shukadeva Goswami is addressed as Mahabhaga. Maha means great and Bhaga means fortunate. So because he is very fortunate, he is describing the Srimad Bhagavatam. Again, Bhagavatam, the same word, Bhaga, comes. Bhagavat, that. This word is used when the meaning is possessing. So, Ashtyarate Vatup. Bhagavan, Bhagyavan, Bhagavat. Bhagavat means one who has the power to possess the Supreme Lord. Perfect. That was Srila Prabhupada. He had the power to possess the Supreme Lord. He is called Bhagavat. A devotee, he is called Bhagavat, and the book in which the pastimes and characteristics of Bhagavan are described, that is also called Bhagavat. So, Srimad Bhagavat. Shri means beauty. Again, Vat. Bhagavat, Srivat. Shri means very beautiful. So in every sloka, you will find very, very beautiful. 5,000 years ago, these verses were written. There is no comparison. Nobody can write such verses even up to this date. It was written by Vyasadeva, Veda Vyas. So as we sat in the small but crowded temple room listening attentively to Prabhupada's potent lecture, it made me realize that as a Maha Bhagavat devotee, Srila Prabhupada is also incomparable. Nobody is able to give such astute insights into everyday life and such lucid explanations of the Vedic literature as he. He is truly the representative of Srila Vyasadeva, and we neophytes a Maha Bhaga to be daily sitting at his lotus feet. So, that's a little introduction to this seminar, Srila Prabhupada, the Living Bhagavatam. Now, how long do we go for? When do I finish? Never? do we have a time limit? What's the program? Okay. 1 or 1:30. Okay. Alright, so we're going to finish at this point. We'll continue on with this afternoon at 1 o'clock, if everybody gathers. And this afternoon we'll get on to the actual topics. So as I mentioned, there's about 7 or 8 different themes. And what we'll do is I'll read out the headers, and then you can all decide which topic that you want to hear about. Yeah, we'll take a vote. Yeah, democracy, not demon crazy. when the Vaishnavs vote, that's a completely different mentality. That's the will of the Vaishnavs. That's a lot different. Okay, so we'll finish at this point. Thank you very much, and we'll see you all at 1 o'clock. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.